But we begin with the folks at Charter School USA. They are completing their third year at operating the takeover schools of Manuel, Emma Donnan, and Howe. And the whole role of takeover schools seems to be changing and evolving in terms of the State Board of Education and a better relationship with the Indianapolis Public Schools. The head folks of Charter Schools USA, John and Sherry Hagee, join me live. Guys, how are you? Happy New Year.
Great to be with you.
Is it fair to say that there's starting to be a different relationship between you guys and IPS? Is that fair to say? Kind of, and the State Board of Education is kind of brokering this?
I think so. You know, Dr. Farabee and I and our teams have had a lot of great discussions. He's, I think, been open to ideas. We've been open to ideas. We're working together. We all agree on the same things, you know, Amos, and that is we're going to have to intervene earlier in these communities. These schools that are being turned around by us, the kids are coming in 2, 3, 4 years below grade level. So it wasn't at that middle school time that, you know, they were behind. They were behind in kindergarten or first grade and second grade. So getting to a more systemic view of the neighborhood and helping that. We're all on the same page. We've done good hard work because of our teachers and the community and the parents, and IPS is supporting that, and we're supporting them. And I do think there's more alignment than there's been in a long time.
Looking at the performance of the schools in the last academic year, there was progress in all three of your schools, even the two schools that were F. The scores were closer to a D than they were like zero, which was the previous years, and one of the schools got a D. As you all are looking this year, particularly in this transition to the Indiana hybrid, son of Common Core standards, are you all, are the teachers and the students adapting to what this new I-STEP is going to be in about a month and a half?
So I think as we continue to prepare for that, no one really knew what that was going to look like, and the accountability measures are still a little vague. Mm-hmm. But our teachers have done an incredible job of really looking at rigor in the curriculum, those higher order thinking questions and skills that we need to be developing with our students. And they have done a really good job of working hard to try to prepare our students to be successful.
One of the things, John Hagee, you talked about the pipeline of students coming into those three schools that you were given responsibility for. And a lot of people listening, I think a lot of people in the community heard takeover schools from IPS, so they assumed that these were predominantly African-American schools or predominantly African-American or Latino schools, but you got a large percentage of white students. Is one of the surprises been to you the poor academic preparation of the white students you encountered at these three schools?
Absolutely.
And I mean, is that a story that the media here doesn't talk about?
It is. And it's a story, I think, nationally that people don't talk about. They always assume, you know, poor performance and color. And oftentimes there are connections. We know that in poverty areas. But when you're talking about Indianapolis and the South Side, these students are white, Hispanic, brown, black, then they're really struggling with poverty, right? That's the common knowledge issue. And the crime rates are high, and the dysfunction and breakdown in families. So what we're doing is working with partners in the community, IPS coming alongside. The State Board gave us a framework for this, and we have to go back. And as you know, Amos, this was controversial, but it is working. And we shouldn't, even though it's getting tweaked and improved, there's definitely good progress on the ground.
You all are talking with IPS. There is a state law that would allow some flexibility in terms of being in IPS buildings and providing programming. The last time I drove by Manuel, I was on my way to see a screening of Selma. It was down on the South Side. And drove by there and was remarking to the people that I was with. I said, okay, that's Manuel. They got about 500-600 students in a building that's built for 2,000. And the people that were with us said, how do they sustain that? I said, God only knows. Are there, as part of talking with State Board and IPS, looking at ways to put other programs in those buildings?
Right. So I think there's two ideas. One is to expand the grades downwards towards the K-12 environment.
Right.
And the other idea is to go out back into the areas where people have left IPS mm-hmm. and say, come on back. Come back into these partnership schools. Come into these CSUSA-run schools because we're the reform effort now. Mm-hmm. It's not just about charters, IPS, turnaround. It's about where are schools getting results and which schools are getting results. And we believe the manual, Emadon, and how schools, you're seeing real results that are identified, not just in those letter grades, Amos,
right.
but by students marching back in with their feet, parents reapplying. Our enrollment rates are going up.
When people hear that there will be five less charter schools by the end of this school year than now, they may be thinking, this is abnormal. You all have been doing this for a number of years in other parts across the country. Is shrinkage of the number of charter schools normal?
I would say this. There's always a certain amount of working through low performance, high performance, and also the regulatory environment. Let's just be honest. Some of this may or may not be about whether the schools were performing fast enough or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's about did they get enough support themselves,
mm-hmm. right.
or were they set up for failure from the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of this is about how does Indiana, and I just came back from testifying before a Senate committee about charter schools
right.
and this $1,500 per student that the governor's put out there to help make them more equitable. I think Indiana has to ask themselves, if they want great charter schools, are they willing to fund them equitably? And if they can have that money attached to high-performing operators, you're going to attract more folks like us and others around the country who say, Indiana, it's worth the investment to come in here.
Let me ask you on the dollars, because I looked at an analysis of the dollars received by school districts and charter schools. It did not include you guys, or if it did, I missed that part of it. You get the basic roughly $4,500, almost $4,600 per student. Then, because you have high poverty in your three schools, you get a substantial amount of in the complexity formula. So I would dare say that the amount of dollars you get per student is similar to the $5,600 to $6,800 that a student at the township schools get, and IPS is at 7,000, and there are about 12 to 13 charter schools that get more money than IPS. Where do your schools fit in before this so-called extra 1,500?
So the turnaround schools get the buildings at no cost, mm-hmm. but we have to maintain the buildings out of our operating dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way that model works. If we were running a charter school, we would actually have to take all of the money for the...
So if you were getting $7,000 a
right.
kid
that's
under
right.
the basic formula, the basic plus the complexity, then you've not only got to cover the teachers and the academics, you've got to cover the light bill and some of the other stuff.
That's right. And the charter school, it's even harder because they've got to pay for their lease. They got to pay for their actual facility out of their ADM dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So Indiana is one of the largest gaps in the country between their charter school total funding and their traditional school total funding.
Mm-hmm.
Because these charters don't get any of the local millage funds that pay for these buildings.
What would we call here property tax?
That's correct. And so that's the real issue.
For transportation and building maintenance and construction and what have you.
And here's the question. Why should charter schools, which predominantly support and serve brown, black, and poor white kids, get less money per kid than traditional schools that get all of those same dollars? These parents pay for taxes just like everybody else, and these students are public school students. And I think that's something that the state is grappling with.
Is it in your view that when the public looks at the full total dollars per student, they should be looking not only at the basic formula that comes from state taxes, the complexity formula that comes from state taxes, but also what it is per student that that local school district is getting from the residents of that district through property tax. There needs to be an apples to apples comparison.
That's right, because if you're not doing that, you're taking money that was going to go to teacher salaries or to books in a classroom, and you're now paying for a facility with those funds rather than having money to pay just for that facility. And that's not good for a charter school that has to compete to get high-quality teachers and oftentimes needs those teachers to stay later and to have longer school days and work on Saturdays because we're trying to get those kids up to grade level.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We're talking with John and Sherry Hagee, the founders of Charter Schools USA. As it relates to the challenges now, particularly on the academic side, I know we talk a lot about ISTEP, but the bulk of a good percentage of your kids are the high school kids that got to pass that those key ECAs. You've made progress at your schools with that. Is the progress continuing?
It absolutely is. We feel very good about where we are this year in terms of student performance. And we are continuing to see through data analysis, through analyzing where our students are in terms of the curriculum. So we are continuing to see them excel and move forward. We have to remember when students come to us and like John said, they're coming in below grade level, not prepared adequately for middle school or high school. A year's worth of growth in a year is not acceptable. We have a year and a half or 2 years of growth that we must make in a year, and we are continuing to see a lot of our students meet their spring goal here at the winter testing. So we feel very good about where our students are performing for this year.
On the two schools that Ball State elected not to renew their contracts, one is right down the street from Manual High School, University Heights. And they were trying to, they were, had cut a deal with the University of Indianapolis in terms of dual credit. A couple of questions. One, will you be reaching out to the folks at University, Heights as well as their, parent company, community charter schools to see, you know, how you all could be of service in this transition?
Absolutely. In fact, one of our principals has already reached out to both principals of those buildings. To really talk about what's best for those students, how we possibly offer services such as would they want to enroll with us or articulation for those students. And we are looking at doing a partnership somewhere on the 12th. Falls Creek is already preparing a parent night for their students and families to come and hear the options that are available to them.
Are there synergies given that, you know, your three facilities are on the south side with the University of Indianapolis, to see, you know, are there things that can be done in dual credit? And even in the whole takeover thing, was dual credit ever an option to offer?
It is. We currently offer a dual credit program in our high school
with
the university.
And
we have it at both Manual and at Howe. We transport our students over for courses because that is so important in this whole college and career readiness component for our high school students.
Okay. Coming back on that, in terms of what the president said the other night about community colleges, how does that fit into what you guys do with K through 12, whether it's here in Indiana or in your other places where you operate across the country?
So I think it's extremely important. We have to remember that our students have to be college ready or career ready.
Right.
And we're trying to help our students have that vision of college actually is an option for me. And so we start down in our middle schools really talking about college readiness, what it looks like, what it feels like. We take lots of field trips so that they can actually see what that experience would be for them and to begin to build in them an understanding of this is where I want to head with my future. Obviously, we also have programs where our students can receive some certifications for entering the workforce, because if entering the workforce right out of high school is what their option is, then we want to make sure that we've adequately prepared them for the highest paying job possible.
Let me ask something. We had a controversy here right at the beginning of the new year where somebody that was not thinking well in IPS came up with a brilliant idea. Gee, let's have all the IPS commencements in one place on one day, and high school graduation should be no more than an hour. And in talking around town and trying to find out options, I talked to my friends over at Tinley and Ed Power and said, how do y'all do graduation? They said, well, we do graduations on a work day. I said, what? They said, we do graduations at Circle Theater on a work day, but we invite the whole student body to attend the graduation so that they can see the end product. Given the small, your schools are relatively small. You don't have big mega high schools like North Central or Ben Davis. Do you all do commencements like that where the underclassmen get to come and see what happens? And if you do, how important is that?
So it's extremely important. Again, you're trying to build in those students the idea of this is an opportunity for me. This is where I want to be.
Uh-huh.
And so we do hold our commencements actually on Saturdays mm-hmm. in our schools.
Right.
And all family members, all students are invited.
Whether they're in the graduating class or not.
Absolutely.
Do they come? Do the underclassmen come? Do they bring aunties and uncles in them?
Absolutely. We have a lot of our students that participate. They come to see their friends, to cheer them on for the accomplishment that they've made. I mean, graduating high school is a big deal.
And many of them, Amos, being the first time ever graduates from high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had parents and aunts and uncles come up and go, this is the first one in our family ever actually graduated.
When I mentioned a one-hour graduation, John gave me the same look that everybody that I mentioned that to would look like, you're kidding me. No, I wouldn't.
I mean, these students have worked 13 years of their life
yeah.
to get here. We have to make a big deal out of it because it is a big deal. And we all know that high school graduation isn't the end. It's the beginning. College graduation is a much today, like a BA is much what a high school degree was 25, 30 years ago. Right. So we need to have students understanding that education is their way out of poverty.
Mm-hmm. And celebrate it, but also, hey, there's another milestone, a goal, whether it is a four-year college graduation or whether it's a graduation at an Ivy Tech or a community college where you're getting 2 years, or they let you come and wear the cap and gown if you're getting a certificate.
That's right.
Right, or even into the military.
Right.
We have several of our students who are entering the military, mm-hmm. and that's another component of the options that are important for our students to really think about.
And I understand the governor is coming later today down to Manual. You gonna put him in a classroom?
Well, we're proud that he came. We invited him a couple months ago, and he made it in his schedule. He's coming at 2 o'clock this afternoon to Manual to tour the school, to tell the teachers that they've done great work, tell the students who've actually, had to perform, congratulations.
Is this
on
the first
progress.
Time a governor has come to any of the takeover schools?
Well, it's the first time that we've had a governor since we've been here.
Because I don't think the previous governor went to any of the takeover schools. I don't think anyone's gone over to Arlington or up to Gary. See?
I gotta tell you, I'm not here from one side or the other. I just have to tell you from the perspective of having a governor come out to a turnaround school.
Any governor of the sovereign state.
That's right. And come into that school and thank those teachers and thank those parents and thank those students. It's gotta be a shout out. We have to give credit where credit's due.
One final question that has nothing to do with education, but you worked in the administration of Governor Jeb Bush. Is he running?
You know, he seems to be. He says he's exploring it. I think that's a serious look. I don't look at education from Republican or Democrat. I look at what's best for kids.
Right.
Kids don't have R&D. I just know that Governor Bush had a vision that inspired me and what we've done to help make sure that every child, no matter where they're born, what zip code that they live in, has the access to a high quality school. And that's what I believe in.
And if you want more information about Charter Schools USA, just go to
CharterSchoolsUSA.com.
CharterSchoolsUSA.com. John Hagee and Sherry Hagee, always good to see you. Again, happy
nice
new
to see
year.
You, Amos. Thank you very much. Great to see you.
And they're going to be listening in the car on their way, rushing down to Manual High School, trying to figure out how does IU and Purdue work together to recruit students? How do they divide them up? How do they divide this? How does this work? We will find out in a hot second. It's After News with Amos for a Thursday.